Hello there, I'm Rob, and you're of course listening to the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 24th of November 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by sightloss charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. Appearing this week, we have myself, Rob, Mina, Craig, Helen, Jeff, Pete, Jean, Simon, Angela, Christine, Ed, Liz, Ian, Sarah, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We had the quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, the weather, facts about the Black Country, information about ICANN's Christmas event, a 10-day workout, and rounding all that off with a piece from the Black Country Living Museum about traditional sweets. But we start this week with a message from our sight loss advisor, Pete.
Hello, to let you know that Beacon are now taking orders for new large print 2022 diaries. They come in different sizes, the smallest being an A6 pocket diary, right the way through to an A4 desk diary. Also, A3 portrait and landscape calendars are available too. So Beacon are now taking orders. If you would like your new 2022 diary or calendar for next year, give us a call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a sight loss advisor. That's 01902 880 111.
Thanks for that, Pete. Now comes a message about next week's edition. This is an advance notice to let you know that next week's edition will be different than usual. Instead, it will contain a mixture of features and articles. But we'll be back to normal service the following week. Now we have our guess the sound question. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. We start as always then, with some local news, brought to us by Ian, Angela, Ed, Liz, and first up, we have Christine.
Cracks first started appearing in West Midlands Metro trams almost 2 years ago, it can be revealed. All services are currently suspended on the line after cracks were found on a number of Spanish-made CAF trams using the network last week. It was believed that damage was first spotted during routine inspections in June when services were initially suspended. However, it has now emerged that a tram was taken out of service in December 2019 after cracks were found, before being repaired and returned to the network. The revelation came in a private meeting held by the West Midlands Combined Authority. It was also revealed that 7 trams are now ready to return to service having been repaired, although transport bosses say a bare minimum of 9 out of the full fleet of 21 trams are required for the network to reopen. Councillors sitting on the West Midlands Combined Authority are desperate to get services running on the line ahead of the Christmas rush. Councillor Ian Brookfield, the West Midlands Combined Authority portfolio holder for economy and innovation, said a full and frank discussion had taken place with West Midlands Mayor Andy Street and transport bosses over how to get the metro running as quickly as humanly possible. Many leaders, including myself, have urged all those involved to do their absolute level best to try and get a service, even a reduced one, running before Christmas, he said. We can't afford to lose that Christmas business. We have been reassured that all efforts are being made to achieve this.
A Black Country NHS Trust has been fined more than £2.5 million over safety failings after an inquiry into the deaths of two patients during dark days at one of its hospitals in 2018. The Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust was prosecuted by the Care Quality Commission following two separate incidents in which a mother of six and a 14-year-old girl, who were both suffering from sepsis, died after being exposed to significant risk of avoidable harm. Natalie Billingham, 33, died at Dudley's Russell's Hall Hospital from multiple organ failure caused by a severe infection in March 2018. A two-day hearing at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court was told teenager Casey Jane Robinson, who had cerebral palsy, died in the same month after an inaccurate early warning score meant a sepsis screening tool was not triggered. The Care Quality Commission said the care both patients received was undermined by the Trust's failure to address known safety failings, which had been repeatedly raised in the months before the deaths. The Trust admitted two breaches of the 2008 Health and Social Care Act. Passing sentence to the Trust, District Judge Graham Wilkinson fined it £2,533,332 and ordered it to pay a £38,000 contribution to the costs of the prosecution. Mr. Wilkinson, who conceded that improvements in care had been made since the dark days of 2018, said, "We have all now heard and been deeply moved by the victim personal statements. To hear direct from the mothers of both victims and to witness firsthand both their distress and bravery is something that I doubt any present will ever forget."
A major £78 million project to remodel a busy motorway junction in Warsaw is on track to finish on time, but motorists are warned more closures are on the way. Highways bosses said the two-way programme to transform Junction 10 of the M6 motorway was on track to be completed before the Commonwealth Games next summer. The work, which started in August 2020, is seeing existing 50-year-old bridges across the motorway replaced, with the number of lanes doubled from 2 to 4. At an economy and environment scrutiny meeting on Thursday, Councillor Pard Corr asked if work was on schedule and whether any further closures will be needed. Matt Croton, Warsaw Council Transportation Major Projects and Strategy Manager, confirmed two major closures will be required in May 2022. He said, "We are on schedule. The project was always due to be completed before the Commonwealth Games next summer, and that's what the programme currently shows. Obviously, with any large construction project, there will be challenges along the way. The scale of works at M6 Junction 10 are quite significant, but it is on programme." He added, "There will be two further closures to demolish the existing bridges across the junction. Those new bridges are much wider. At the moment, there are two lanes, but the new one will have four. Those life-expired bridges will have to be demolished towards the end of the programme. At the moment, we are anticipating the demolition to take place in May 2022 under two separate closures. The exact dates haven't been confirmed yet, but that's what the programme shows."
"It is time to draw a line under the Dudley Hippodrome furore and look to the future," a council boss has said. Supporters of the theatre were dealt a major blow this week as members of Dudley Council's Development Control Committee meeting voted in favour of demolishing the building to make way for a new university-style campus. Campaigners have said it's a wasted opportunity, but Councillor Simon Phipps, Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Enterprise, said all realistic options for regenerating the building had been exhausted. Dudley Hippodrome has sat derelict for more than a decade and has been subjected to vandalism over the years. Supporters want to turn it back into an arts venue. Councillor Phipp said, "This project is moving in the right direction. We have the funding already confirmed and a recommendation by our planning committee to go ahead with demolition. We now just need to wait for a final decision from the Secretary of State before we can proceed. I understand the committee's recommendations will come as a blow to those who have campaigned for years to bring the Hippodrome back into use as a theatre, but we have to acknowledge that we have exhausted all realistic options and now is the time to draw a line under what's gone before and look to the future. The Theatres Trust has been working with Dudley Hippodrome Trust to save the theatre. Theatres Trust National Planning Advisor, Tom Clark, spoke at the meeting on Wednesday night and said he was disappointed by the council's decision. He said Theatres Trust is extremely disappointed in the decision by Dudley Metropolitan Borough Council to give planning permission for the demolition of the Hippodrome. Dudley Hippodrome has been on our Theatres at Risk register since 2010, in recognition of the building's status as an increasingly rare 1930s purpose-built variety theatre with a lavish Art Deco interior, and that it had the potential to provide a live performance space that Dudley is lacking.
A month-long amnesty has been declared by Dudley Council to help people avoid incorrectly claiming council tax discount they are not entitled to. Finance bosses are asking people to check and update their living arrangements if they are currently claiming a reduction in council tax. People who live alone can apply for a 25% reduction in their council tax, and the council carries out regular reviews to ensure no one is claiming it that shouldn't. People who fraudulently claim the single person discount could face prosecution, including repaying money claimed. The council is now running an amnesty period up to December the 17th for people to check and update their records without fear of prosecution. After that date, an in-depth review will be carried out to identify people falsely claiming the discount. Councillor Steve Clark, Cabinet Member for Finance, said, "We appreciate that the majority of people claiming the discount on their council tax are eligible, and that's fine. But we have to balance that with the need to protect public money and ensure it only goes to people who really need it. People could also be claiming it by mistake if their circumstances have changed. This is a helping hand for those people who need it, and we would encourage people to get in touch if they need help or are eligible for the 25% discount. Changes in circumstances could include a new partner moving in or taking in a housemate or lodger. It could also include a child over 18 who has left education but lives at the same address. More information can be found on the council's website."
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen, which means it's that time of the week again and I'm back with a roundup of all things Beacon. Now, you may remember last week we told you about our virtual Christmas tree. The idea is that you can dedicate a light on our tree to shine in memory of a loved one. At this time of year, many of us will be thinking of someone special gone but never forgotten. So, if you'd like to honour someone you'll be thinking of over the festive season, why not dedicate a light to them on our tree? To add your light, visit www.visufund.com/forgetmenot21. That's www.visufund, and that's visufund.com/forgetmenot21. Every dedication made will help us ensure that no one is left facing sight loss alone. Now, onto another festive story. Hands up, who's started their Christmas card yet? We've got a beautiful range of festive cards for 2021. And what's more, by sending a Beacon card, you'll be helping to support someone with sight loss as well. You can buy online at our Etsy shop, www.etsy.com/shop/madebyfablab. It's a bit of a mouthful, so I'll give you that again. www.etsy.com/shop/madebyfablab, where you can also get some beautiful personalised Christmas gifts, or you can pick up a pack of Christmas cards in one of our shops as well. Next this week, can you help change someone's life through a phone call? What an amazing thing to do, eh? Well, Our incredible telephone befriending service is on the lookout for new volunteers to provide a listening ear for people in need of someone to talk to. Our volunteers come from all walks of life and include someone like Pete, who signed up to make calls during lockdown after helping his elderly parents and realising there'd be others like them who wouldn't have anyone to turn to for support. He says that he's loved being able to make a difference and hear from participants how much his calls have helped them. If you'd like to join us, call 01982 880 111 or email people@beaconvision.org. We'd love to hear from people who have lived experience of sight loss or loneliness and may now want to help others. So why not get in touch? Lastly this week, food, festive fun, family, friends. What more do you want at Christmas? Well, we're now taking bookings for our festive meals at Beacon. So why not bring your family and friends or community group along to enjoy an extra special Christmas celebration in 2021? We'll be serving up a four-course menu on December the 14th, 15th, 21st, 22nd and 23rd for £19.99 per person. You'll be able to tuck in knowing that you're helping people with sight loss locally as well because funds raised support our work. If you'd like to find out more or book, give us a ring on 01902 880 111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. Tickets must be booked in advance. That's it for this week. Don't forget though, there's still time to get your tickets for our Santa run on December the 5th. Just head to our website, www.beaconvision.org/Santa-run-2021. Right, hopefully I'll be back soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Helen. Now we head over to our next block of local news. And starting this one, it's Angela.
The deputy leader of Wolverhampton's Conservatives is set to lose his seat after being deselected. Councillor Simon Bennett, who has represented the Merrihill ward since 2018, has been one of the city's most prominent Tory figures, also working as constituency assistant to Stuart Anderson, Conservative MP for Wolverhampton South West. But members of his own local branch have revolted against him and decided that they want him gone. It's not known why the local branch of the party have turned against their councillor. Mr Bennett said he'd be seeking re-election in another city ward. Fellow Merrihill councillor Wendy Dalton said the branch would be putting forward party member James Montero to stand in place of Councillor Bennett in the ward at 2022 local elections. Councillor Bennett said this week, "Each ward has its own selection meetings and this decision has been made. It's a ward-based decision, it's happened and it is what it is. I have the full support of my colleagues and the group are fully behind me. I will remain as deputy leader of the Conservatives and see this decision as opening up a lot of new opportunities for me."
More than £340,000 has been saved through housing fraud prevention in Dudley over the last year after a series of investigations were carried out. Dudley Council's dedicated team examined a total of 577 reports of suspected housing fraud in the borough, with fraud being proven in 56 cases. They investigated claims of people who have fraudulently applied for, obtained, or illegally sublet a council property, or those who have other homes. And of the proven cases, 11 properties were recovered, 15 housing applications were cancelled due to false declarations, 10 applicants were excluded from reapplying for council housing in the future, and 6 people were prosecuted for fraud. It is estimated that the team's investigations have saved the council a notional value of £346,000 in fraud prevention. Councillor Laura Taylor-Childs, Cabinet Member for Housing and Community Services, said, "It's International Fraud Awareness Week this week, an opportune time to remind people what they can do to help us tackle suspected cases of housing fraud. For every case we investigate and identify housing fraud has taken place, we are protecting our housing stock to ensure only those who are genuinely eligible and in need are living in our homes. Please help us be our eyes and ears and report anyone who you think might be committing fraud. People can report suspected housing fraud anonymously by contacting the fraud hotline on 01384 814 242 or emailing hotline@dudley.gov.uk.
The policing minister has slapped down Labour politicians in the West Midlands for blaming soaring crime levels on budget cuts. Kit Malthouse MP said successive Labour police commissioners in the region needed to accept responsibility for reduced officer numbers over the past decade. He said London, where he served as deputy mayor for policing under Boris Johnson, had also faced budget cuts but was in a better position than West Midlands Police. In the latest official figures, the West Midlands police area saw crime soar by more than 20%, while in almost every other force area it decreased. The region's Labour PCC, Simon Foster, has followed the lead of his predecessor, David Jamieson, in blaming the desperate situation on budget cuts, which he says have resulted in the force losing 2,200 officers since 2010. Speaking in a Westminster Hall debate on the use of stop and search, Mr. Malthouse said, "Police and crime commissioners do make a difference. You can't walk away from the decisions that were made over the last 10 years and say, nothing to do with us, Gov." And it is the case that decisions made in this decade by police and crime commissioners means that as we get into a time of investment in policing, and I'm happy that we're now over halfway through our growth in the number of officers, where you start from is a product of those decisions that were made. Mr. Foster has called on Conservative MPs in the region to back his calls for more than £50 million to pay for 1,000 extra officers on top of extra funding to address a budget black hole. The force is getting 1,200 new officers by 2023 as part of the government's uplift programme.
Council chiefs say they feel badly let down after claiming police refused to move on travellers over concerns their human rights would be infringed. Dudley Council says travellers have ignored demands to move from their transit site on Budden Road, Coseley, despite having been there for longer than the 28-day period allowed by law. In an attempt to move them on, bailiffs were called in last week, but according to Council leader Patrick Harley, the authorities' appeals for support from West Midlands Police were turned down. Councillor Harley said, "Usually once the 28-day period is up, travellers move on, but this time they refused to do so. We called in the bailiffs, but the police commander for Dudley refused to support us because she believed it infringed their human rights. This is despite the same police commander authorising the right support to move illegal incursions on in recent months. This goes against protocol agreed between the council and West Midlands Police. We've always worked closely in partnership with the police on issues around travellers, but I have to say that we feel badly let down by the police on this occasion. We always put the interests of our own Dudley Borough residents first, but unfortunately I feel the police are expressing more concern for the human rights of the travellers than they are for our own local residents. It is understood that police have received no reports of any crime associated with the encampment." Dudley Police Commander, Chief Superintendent Kim Maydell, said, "We continue to liaise with our partners in Dudley Council on the best way to proceed. It's always imperative that any action taken in respect of any of our communities is lawful and proportionate."
The Grand Theatre has been awarded £410,805 by the government in the latest round of Culture Recovery Fund grants. The Wolverhampton Theatre will be able to continue its work in the community, as will other organisations in the Black Country, which were given lifeline cash windfalls. South Asian Festival Sandwell and Birmingham Mela, which is held in Smethwick's Victoria Park, received £46,000, and West Bromwich's The People's Orchestra was given £23,130. In Warsaw, the Black Country Dance Festival was given £25,000, and in Hales Owen Theatre Company, The Pappy Show was awarded £55,700. However, the 125-year-old Grand Theatre was the big winner, receiving its third payout from the Department of Culture since the pandemic began. The £410,805 will ensure they can continue running a programme of outreach activity, including tours, youth theatre, book clubs, BAME ambassador forums and dementia-friendly activities. The theatre's chief executive, Adrian Jackson, said having been successful in the first two rounds of the culture recovery funding, we remain incredibly grateful to the DCMS and the Arts Council for now granting our third round application. To be awarded a fund of up to £410,000 is a great reassurance to ensure our work can be safeguarded in the immediate future if needed. We would also like to thank our patrons, who have returned in high numbers since the full reopening in September. Arts Council England Chief Executive Darren Henley said, "This continued investment from the government on an unprecedented scale means our theatres, galleries, music venues, museums and art centres can carry on playing their part in bringing visitors back to our high streets, helping to drive in economic growth, boosting community pride and promoting good health."
It's time next to give our brains a workout, as we have Mina with this week's quiz questions.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year did Dudley Zoo open? Question 2. What is on the menu for the animals in Dudley Zoo at Christmas? Question 3. What was unique about Dudley Zoo's chairlift? Question 4. What was the castle's address before 1926? Question 5. Which side held the castle during the English Civil War? And finally, question 6. What is the name given to the castle famous ghost? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Thanks as always for those, Mina. Now we go into some more local news, and starting this one, we hear the voice of Ian.
The family of Wolves legend Ron Flowers have been joined by emotional fans to reflect on the life of one of the club's greatest players. People were invited to light a candle after a 20-minute service at St. Peter's Collegiate Church on Saturday afternoon, in which tributes were paid by the rector, Reverend David Wright, and Ron's family. Flowers, who died last week at the age of 87, made 515 appearances for Wolves between 1952 and 1967, making him the club's fifth highest appearance holder and an icon of its most successful era, in which he and Wolves won three First Division titles and the FA Cup. More than 50 people gathered inside the City Centre Church, including Ron's family, Wolves legends Steve Bull, John Richards, and Wolverhampton Mayor Greg Brackenridge. Glenn Flowers, Ron's son, thanked those in attendance on behalf of the family. He said, "My father would have been proud to have eavesdropped on this service today. He was blessed with a wonderful talent, one he exercised to its full potential. The fame that followed, he carried lightly. He possessed a cool, calm judgment. He was a man who found his niche, accomplished his tasks, and in doing so won the respect of his fellow man." Many Wolves fans came to light a candle and take a moment to reflect ahead of Saturday's match. The service finished at 2 p.m. when tributes moved to Molineux, with flowers being laid out and a minute's applause held before Wolves' Premier League match with West Ham. Chants of "There's only one Ron Flowers" rang around the ground for a man who will be sorely missed.
All day free parking will be available at Dudley Council car parks in the run-up to Christmas. Shoppers can already park for free for up to 2 hours on council car parks, but this has been extended to help boost trade during the festive season. Free parking will be available on council car parks across the borough on Saturday, December the 11th and the 18th. The same will apply for Dudley and Briley Hill when both towns host their Festive Lights events on November 27th. Visitors to Sedgley on November 28th will also be able to park for free for the town's Festive Lights event. There will also be free parking in Kings Winford for the event on December 4th. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "It's something we like to do every year to help traders and shoppers when they need it most. Call it an early Christmas present from us. It is really important we encourage people into our town centres, not only to give them that festive feel in the run-up to Christmas, but also to boost the local economy."
The Chief Executive of Dudley Integrated Health and Care NHS Trust is retiring at the end of the year. Paul Assender has been in charge since April 2020 and oversaw the formation of the new trust and its expansion over the last 2 years to be the first of its kind in the country by integrating primary care with community, physical and mental health services. Penny Harris will be the new interim chief executive from January until June, whilst the trust recruits a new permanent boss. Trust Chair Harry Turner said, "Paul has done a tremendous job leading the organisation as chief executive for the past 20 months, including the pandemic and all that entails. The board and his colleagues are deeply grateful to Paul for his leadership at DIHC and for his significant number of years of dedicated service to the NHS. Paul, who worked for 38 years in the NHS, praised his colleagues he is leaving behind as he heads into retirement. He said, "It has been an absolute privilege to work for the NHS for 38 years and more recently to serve as chief executive at DIHC. For me, healthcare is a people business and I've worked with some outstanding colleagues over the years who are committed to providing the best care possible to the communities they serve."
Aldi has been granted permission to extend opening times by an extra hour at one of its flagship Wolverhampton stores, despite objections from neighbours. The supermarket had applied for a variation of a premises licence in relation to its store in Mercury Drive off Stafford Road, which falls within the Bushbury South and Low Hill ward. Initially, Aldi had sought to extend opening times from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. to midnight, but then amended the application to 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. After a number of neighbours emailed the council's licensing bosses to express concern, Lisa Gilligan of Solicitors Fritz, acting on behalf of Aldi, said the stores that usually open at 8 a.m. are effectively the oldest stores in the Aldi estate. Over the last 12 months, the business realised that on occasions this wasn't enough for operational flexibility within that group of 400-odd stores. The current time allowed for the licence is 11 p.m, so now what we are effectively seeking is one additional hour each morning. On occasions over the last 12 months, this store and the other 399 have opened at 7 a.m, most notably for Christmas week and also to achieve social distancing. One sincerely hopes that social distancing will not be necessary in the future, but opening at that time did prove vital and incredibly useful.
Plans to build a new medical practice on open land in Wolverhampton have been given the go-ahead despite concerns over the loss of green space. City planners this week granted approval for the new two-storey building on the area of land in Bushbury, bordering Rushall Road, Northwood Park Road and Broadway. The application by MedCentres PLC was made to enable two existing surgeries in the city to relocate and merge under one roof. Prestbury Medical Centre, which has surgeries in Prestwood Road West, Wensfield, and also operates from Bushbury Medical Centre in Hellier Road, has been working to secure new medical facilities for the last 7 years, as the existing buildings are both at capacity and unfit for purpose. However, the proposal was met with strong objection from Ward Councillor Andrew McNeil, who told this week's meeting of the Council's Planning Committee, "This asset should be protected from any development. The effect of such a development on the character of the neighbourhood will be detrimental. This is the gateway to Northwood Park, so effectively you will be fencing the park in and it would mean the loss of valued community space forever. It was once a beautiful area that should be used to follow the council's wishes to beautify and green our city. It shouldn't be seen as just another opportunity to fill in another green space because it's easy. Over the last month or so, I've spoken to more than 100 residents as part of a Green Belt consultation and only had one resident who actually supported this planning piece. The council should be finding smarter and better ways for the residents of Wensfield to have their existing surgery wishes fulfilled rather than implementing a solution on Bushbury North that nobody actually wants.
A church in Dudley is set to close its doors to worshippers. St Barnabas Church on Middle Park Road in Russell's Hall, Dudley, which has been serving the community for 56 years, will be holding its last church service on the 12th of December at 9:30 a.m. Church vicar, Rachel Newell, said a decision to close had been a painful one. She added that although the worshipping congregation is sadly coming to an end, the building itself will still be used by the community, and that they are exploring possibilities of how to secure it for the future. Up now, we hear from Mina, who has information about the organisation ICANN's latest Christmas event.
Christmas party update. We have finalised plans for ICANN's first Christmas party. It will be held on 3rd of December at St Bart's Church Community Hall. The party will start at 6 p.m. and there will be no rush to call it a night. Plenty of food on the evening will be included for all ICANN guests and there will be a live choir to entertain us. There will also be a bar available for guests to purchase drinks from. It's been a tough couple of years for everyone, so we will be aiming to make it a fun and memorable night, something that everyone can do with. There is a limit to how many we can have in the venue, so please make sure you get your name down ASAP to avoid any disappointment. So, details are as follows. Date, 3rd of December 2021. Time, 6 p.m. Venue, St Bart's Community Church Hall. Address, Vicarage Road, Penn, Wolverhampton, WV4 5HU. Please confirm your attendance ASAP. If you need guidance of how to get to the venue or if you have any further questions, please let me know. You can contact me on 07800 737851. I look forward to seeing you there, Mina. Bye.
Thanks for sharing that with us, Mina. Now we have, for this edition, our final block of local news. And starting this one off, we hear from Liz.
A strong man who has made his name on Britain's Got Talent is campaigning for improvements to be made to a landmark park. East Park's paddling pool has been condemned by health and safety inspectors due to out-of-date pipework, rendering it unusable. Now, Stuart Gold Crusher Goldsmith is campaigning for improvements to be made to the facilities and is even using his film production company to make a film about the park in Wolverhampton. Mr. Goldsmith said, "I always like to give back to the community. It's a very beautiful park, but the pipework on the pool is 300 years out of date. If it was up and running, it would be such a beautiful place for people to go." Stuart came to fame when he was a contestant on Britain's Got Talent in 2008 and managed to lift Ant and Dec simultaneously, even carrying them into the studio for the final. He was then awarded the Millennium Face of the City by Wolverhampton Council and has raised more than £158,000 for charity Promise Dreams since 2003. Now he's helping Wolverhampton councillor Anwyn Muston to petition for improvements to be made to the park. The strong man joined campaigners in East Park to hand over a petition to council leader Ian Brookfield, asking for the much-needed renovations to be made.
Dudley Winter Ales Fair will be supporting the Black Country Food Bank when it returns this month. The Black Country Food Bank has been chosen as the charity for this year's festival, which takes place from November the 25th to November the 27th at Dudley Town Hall. Festival goers can support the organisation by donating unused tokens, cash and dry food at a collection point at the event. Festival organiser Carl Denning said, "Most people know the great work our food bank have done in helping those most in need. In fact, quite a lot of local folk give to help others. But few realise that the food banks need more than just food. At this time of year, they really do need help in keeping the lights on." Dudley Winter Ales Fair 21 is hoping to raise cash and food to donate with the help of those attending. Tickets are available at www.dudley.camera.org.uk or at the door.
A barefooted guru is roaming the Black Country, providing support to anyone struggling over the festive period. Guru G. Singh, who hasn't worn shoes for 30 years, walks the streets of Wolverhampton providing help to anyone who needs it. As part of his service, he is currently handing out more than 500 meals per week, including Asian and European food, such as curry and pasta. In addition to the free meals, he is offering blankets, heaters and general home support every Saturday next to Major Chippy in Bilston Town Centre from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. G. Singh first came to Wolverhampton from London in 1959 for a change of environment. He said, "I'm asking for people, if they're in trouble, to contact me and come and collect food. We would benefit from any kind of food donation. The cold weather is going to hit people very heavily, so we are also offering warm clothing." The help he offers doesn't end there. He also treats people with aches and pains, providing spiritual cleansing and scatters ashes all for free. G offers this support totally barefoot, irrespective of the weather. He added, "I will give £1,000 to anyone who sees me with footwear on. I have been offering that since 1996, and nobody has won it, so I'm giving the people in Wolverhampton a chance." 2 days after the first lockdown, G's wife was diagnosed with cancer. She died later in the year. But he has not let his personal loss stop him from providing support, and he only wants to do more.
Roll up, roll up. Gandhi Circus is bringing its all-new production of the pantomime Aladdin to town for the festive season. The show will be performed in the Big Top at Maryhill Shopping Centre from Friday, November the 26th to Monday, January the 3rd, with multiple performances taking place most days. The all-singing, all-dancing, family-friendly Gandhi's Circus of Aladdin production features an international cast of performers, including the Gandhi Showgirls and Cake Holder Clown, who is tasked with trying to save the day as grumpy ringmaster Mr. Popple tries to stop love blossoming between his star circus performer Aladdin and a beautiful princess. More details about the show are available online at gandhiscircus.com. Tickets are priced from £9.99. The Big Top, which is heated, will be located in Level Street, Briley Hill, where the box office will be open on site from Tuesday, November the 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Father Christmas will be visiting Bilston, thanks to a donation from Pallet Track Limited, who have stepped in at the last minute to support the local Rotary Club. Every year, Bilston and Wolverhampton West Rotary Club bring Santa to Bilston, but this year, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, members found they were unable to raise funds for his sleigh to go out on the roads. To ensure children do not miss out on seeing the festive gentleman, the company based in Millfields Road, Wolverhampton, has donated £1,000 to enable Santa to visit the local area with a gift for each child that attends the Bilston Christmas Light Switch-On Ceremony at 5:30 p.m. on November 26. The company is the UK's fastest growing overnight palletised freight network and has sponsored the Rotary Club by £1,000 to enable Santa to pay a visit. Andy Baker, the Rotary Club president, said, "It's been a tough 2 years with the COVID-19 pandemic, but we are really grateful to Pallet Track Limited for stepping in to provide us with some support so that children in Bilston do not miss out this year. They are definitely on Santa's good list." Caroline Green, the company's chief executive, said, "It has been a really hard 18 months for children across the country, and when we heard about Santa's shortfall, we were keen to step in to make sure local children in Bilston did not go without gifts this Christmas."
Now it's time to hear from our resident mastermind. You know who I'm talking about. It's Flashback Roger and his Did You Know section.
Hello everyone. I hope that you're all feeling well and getting yourselves ready for Christmas, as it's just 4 weeks away. Now, I've been reading a bit of local history and I stumbled across some facts about Dudley Zoo that I thought interesting, so I'll share them with you this week. Now then, did you know that Dudley Zoo opened in May 1937. It has the world's largest single collection of tecton structures designed by Russian architect Berthold Lubetkin. They were constructed between 1935 and 1937 using a specialist system of reinforced concrete. The 12 Grade 2 listed buildings were granted World Monuments Fund status in 2009 and are ranked alongside such world-famous landmarks as Machu Picchu and the Taj Mahal. They get through a lot of fruit and veg, and on average the zoo storeman orders 120 kilos of apples, 14 kilos of oranges, 20 kilos of pears, 79 kilos of bananas, 29 kilos of tomatoes, 35 sticks of celery, 11 kilos of cucumber, 54 kilos of lettuce, and a ton of red meat for the carnivores. Oh, and there's even sprouts on the menu at Christmas. The zoo's chairlift was originally opened on May 11, 1958, and was the first passenger-carrying aerial ropeway to be installed in England, and each ride then cost 6 old pence, that's 2.5p today, though today it's free, and 80% of visitors take it to the top. It closed in 2002 over safety fears, but reopened in 2012 after a grant of £172,000 provided the cash. During the work, over 16 layers of paint had to be removed from the chairs, which are now fully restored and painted cream. And here's an odd one, because Dudley Castle has only been situated within the borders of the town of Dudley since 1926, when the borders were changed. It used to be located within the borders of a neighbouring town of Sedgley, so strictly speaking, up until then, it could be said it was Sedgley Castle. During the English Civil War, it was held by Royalists and lost to the Parliamentarians after a 2-year siege in 1646, when Cromwell rendered it useless as a fortification. The residential part was untouched and remained occupied by the Dukes of Dudley until a great fire in 1750 wrecked it completely. The most famous ghost of Dudley Castle is that of the Grey Lady, who is often seen by staff and visitors alike walking the grounds of the castle. And people have also reported hearing drumming from the castle keep, which is thought to be associated with a young drummer boy who was killed by a single bullet during the Civil War. Well then, that's Dudley Castle and Zoo in a nutshell, but I can't let you go without mentioning Teddy Gray's Rock, because for me it's just a part of Dudley as the castle. And with the castle printed on every bag, I must confess that when I was a kid, I thought that was where Teddy Gray lived. Any road up, this has made me fancy one of his herbal tablets, so I'm off. I'll be back next week, so bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra!
Now we have our sportsman, Ian, giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Albion's miserable form on the road continued on Saturday after they were beaten 1-0 at Huddersfield. It's now 4 away defeats in a row for Valerian Ismail's side, who also saw skipper Jake Livermore sent off at the John Smith's Stadium for a reckless challenge on Fraser Campbell. A 6th-minute goal from Daniel Silani proved to be the difference in Yorkshire, with Carroll Coburn's side battling their way to a deserved win. The Baggies created very little in what, overall, was a drab first half. After the interval, Taylor Gardner-Hickman and Matt Clark both came within inches of grabbing an equaliser. Overall, though, the Baggies lacked flair and a creative spark in the attacking third, with the Terriers' battling qualities seeing them over the line. On the day, a documentary was released detailing his difficult recovery from a fractured skull injury. Raul Jimenez scored the only goal of the game to hand Wolves victory over West Ham. The striker should have scored in the first half when he was played through on goal, but the hosts were forced into half-time drawing 0-0 after a dominant display. They came out in the second and continued their momentum as they attacked at will. The goal then came just before the hour mark when Jimenez swept home an accurate effort into the bottom corner. In similar fashion to the two wins over Newcastle and Everton, Wolves then began sitting deeper and defending their slim lead. The Hammers had chances to snatch an equaliser, but Wolves' defence stood firm to secure the 3 points. Speaking after the match, Bruno Lage said, "I am happy with the players. We spent the last week looking at consistency and the two games against Everton and Crystal Palace, and we came again with a good performance and a good result. I am happy because it was a challenge to play well. When you play against a team like West Ham, you need a good performance to win. I said to the players before the game, go and play the way you're training. Because last Thursday I went home with a good feeling because of the way we were training and prepared for the game. We came with a big confidence to make a good performance. We enjoyed it and passed that emotion to our fans to go home with that feeling. They did that." Wolves next face a trip to Carrow Road on Saturday as they take on Dean Smith's Norwich. Albion once again failed to win on the road after they were held to a goalless draw at Blackpool. Valerian Ismail's side headed to Lancashire, having lost their last 4 games on the road. But while they put an end to that losing streak, they were unable to find the win they craved and their performance deserved at Bloomfield Road. After a fairly even opening half hour, the Baggies really turned the screw with Carlan Grant, Matt Clark and Jordan Hughill all having excellent chances to earn all 3 points for Ismail's side. Blackpool also had their moments, with England international Sam Johnston making an outstanding double save in the first half stoppage time. But this was a game Albion really should have won, with fans showing their frustration at the full-time whistle with chants of "sack the board." The Baggies next take on Nottingham Forest this Friday evening at the Hawthorns.
Cheers for that roundup, Ian. Now we have the weather, brought to us by Mina.
The weather for this week ahead looks to be both wet and cold as winter begins its rain. Temperatures look to be an average, hovering around 6 degrees. UV levels are expected to be low throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:56 a.m. for the sunrise and 3:58 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 26th of November, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 7 degrees. On Saturday 27th of November, we have light rain and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 6 degrees. Moving on to Sunday 28th of November, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 5 degrees. On Monday 29th and Tuesday 30th of November, it's light rain and gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 7 degrees. Wednesday 1st of December sees light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 6 degrees. And finally, on Thursday 2nd of December, we have light rain showers and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 5 degrees. So that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thanks for that, Mina. Up next, we have 10 Today. 10 Today is a series of 10-minute exercise sessions that can be done at home by anyone. New episodes will appear fortnightly.
Hello everyone, this is 10 Today, a 10-minute set of exercises to do at home to help keep yourself active. Before we get to today's presenter, a couple of housekeeping points to note. The 10 Today project is funded by the Big Lottery and Sport England, and when you're doing the exercises, it's important that you don't push yourself too far, and by taking part, you agree to 10 Today's terms and conditions. You can read these terms and conditions at tnflink.uk/10T, and the 10T is the digit 1, the digit 0, and the letter T. And please remember that you agree to take part at your own risk. Today's exercises are brought to you by Jeff, and here he is.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to 10 Today, broadcast number 3, where we focus on stretching. This is a short 10-minute physical activity routine which will get you moving and stretching. It's great for your health, including improving your balance and building up your strength. Just take it at your own pace. There's plenty of options. If an exercise feels too much, just take it easy and have a break. All the exercises can be done either standing up or sitting down. Just do whatever feels good for you today. We want you all to do the exercise safely. You are responsible for monitoring how you are feeling throughout the session. If you feel any discomfort or pain, if you feel unwell or dizzy or experience palpitations, then please stop and seek medical advice. Please remember, you agree to take part at your own risk. If you're remaining seated, at least to begin with, it would be a good idea if you can use a hard chair that you can sit upright in, preferably without arms, which can get in the way of some exercises. With your feet flat on the floor, if you are standing up, just step your feet hip width apart, relax your shoulders and stand up nice and tall, and take a couple of deep breaths. If you're sitting down, place both feet on firmly on the floor, keep your back straight, relax your shoulders and take a couple of deep breaths. In and out, in and out. So we're going to start with calf stretch. So if you're standing, have your feet facing forward and step your right foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. And then bend into the right leg, keeping your other leg straight. Put your hands on your right thigh and hold this position, feeling that stretch in your other leg. If you're sitting, straighten out your right leg and place your heel on the floor so your toes are pointing upwards. Keep your left leg bent with your foot flat on the floor and put your hands on your right thigh and lean forward. You should feel that nice stretch in your straight leg. The important thing about stretching is that when you feel the muscle starts to stretch, just hold it there. Don't take it any further. So hold that stretch for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now we're going to swap legs. If you're standing with your feet facing forward, step forward with your left leg and bend into that left leg, keeping your other leg straight. The weight should be on the left foot. And if you're sitting, straighten out the left leg and put your heel on the floor and your toes pointing up, and then keep your right leg bent. Put your hands on your bent thigh and lean your chest slightly forward into the stretch. You should feel a nice stretch in your straight leg. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Next, we're going to do a hamstring stretch. Feet facing forward, step forward with your right foot, placing your foot out in front of you with your foot flat on the floor. Keep this leg straight. Then bend your left leg and put your hands on your hips and just lean the chest forward gently. Remember to keep your back straight. Whether you're sitting or standing, you should feel a nice stretch down the back of your leg. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then return to an upright position and swap your legs. So this time, step forward with your left foot, placing your foot out in front of you. With your foot flat on the floor, then bend your right leg and just lean forward gently. Again, that nice long stretch. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Next up, we have a few head and neck stretches. Starting with the head tilt forward, tilt your head gently forward, as if you're nodding, nice and slowly, and then return upright. Just do that a couple more times. So, nodding nice and slowly downwards, return upright. Keep going slowly so that you feel a nice stretch in your neck. And the final neck stretch, head rotation. Turn your head to the right slowly, as if you're looking over your right shoulder. Then return to the middle. Then return your head left slowly, as if you're looking over your left shoulder. And just keep going, looking from left to right, slowly feeling that nice stretch in your neck. So for the next one, bend your right arm and bend it over your head so your hand is touching your back, like you're scratching your back, and your elbow is next to your ear. With your other hand, press gently on your elbow and feel that nice stretch in your arm. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, then release. Then do the same on the other side. So, bending your arm over your head with your hand on your back and placing the other hand on your elbow and pressing gently, feeling that nice stretch down your arm. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now we have the side stretch. Stand or sit up tall, raise your right arm high with your palm facing up. Then lean slightly over to your left side, nicely and slowly, feeling that stretch all along your right side. Try to keep your body straight and hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now return back to the center. Lean your left hand over, feel that stretch all the way down to your left side, and hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So the next one is chest stretch. So open out both your arms to the side so that your chest sticks out a little and you can feel a nice stretch all the way across your chest. Just a little bit, like a long-lost friend coming towards you, you're going to give them a big hug. So keep your arms open, wide, feeling that stretch across your chest. Keep holding it there for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Next up is trunk rotation. What we mean by trunk is your upper body. Stand or sit up, tall, straight back, place your hands on your hips and slowly look to your left. Feeling your upper body rotate, so bring the right shoulder in front and return gently to the center. And then slowly look to your right, bringing the left shoulder in front, feeling your upper body rotate. Again, we're going to do a few more times, nice and slowly. Great work. If you're standing, remember to keep your knees soft. And the final stretch, hugging a tree. Just hold your arms out in front of you, just like you're hugging a tree, directly in front of you. Your arms from nice circle in front of you, and then cup your hands, putting one hand in front of the other, and push your hands together, feeling that nice stretch across the shoulders and arms. Hold for 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now sit up or stand up and return to that nice relaxed posture we had at the beginning. Brilliant! So that's the end of the stretching session. I hope you feel loose and revitalized. Just to finish off, shake it out. Just shake those arms and hands and legs and feet. Great work, everyone. Doing 10 a day, just 3 times a week, can have great health benefits. It's fun and you'll simply feel better. So do keep going. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for that workout, Jeff. Now we hear from Craig, who this week doesn't bring us his backcountry joke book, but rather has for us a list of backcountry facts.
Hello, I'm Craig, and this week I've got for you some facts about our region, the Backcountry. The name Backcountry is linked to the South Staffordshire coal seam, also known as the 30-foot seam, and is said to be the thickest layer of coal in Britain. It comes to the surface in this area, making the soil black. Dudley is often regarded as the capital of the Black Country, and some definitions have said the Black Country is anywhere within a 4-mile radius of Dudley Castle or within an hour's trudge of Dudley. Most believe Craigleith is the centre of the area. Even before the Industrial Revolution, the area was known for its industry, based in local coal and iron ore. Metalworking thrived in the Civil War, with the Backcountry providing swords, pikes, guns and ammunition for the Royalist troops of King Charles. In 1862, the American consul in Birmingham described the region as black by day and red by night, with red coming from glowing furnaces. This inspired the use of black and red on the Backcountry flag, whose design also reflects local industries making chains and glassware. July 14th was the 15th registered as National Backcountry Day because it is the anniversary of the invention of the world's first steam engine, the Newcomen engine, regulated in the Backcountry in 1712. Lawrence and Cassander Suffolk from Kings Winfield in the Backcountry were among the founding fathers of America. The couple were early immigrants to American colonies, going there in 1627. They first settled in Salem, but moved to New York after being persecuted for being Quakers. The Backcountry has links to the Gunpowder Plot. Several conspirators were captured or killed at Albers Out, Kingsmanford, where they had taken refuge in 1605 after fleeing when their plot was uncovered. Those are my facts about the Backcountry. Thank you for listening.
Well, cheers for those, Craig. Now we get the quiz answers, brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. In what year did Dudley Zoo open? And the answer? 1937. Question 2. What is on the menu for animals in Dudley Zoo at Christmas? And the answer here is sprouts. Question 3. What was unique about Dudley Zoo's chairlift? Answer: it was the first aerial ropeway in the country. Question 4. What was the castle's address before 1926? And the answer, of course, is Sedgley. Question 5. Which side held the castle during the English Civil War? And the answer: the Royalists. And finally, question 6. What is the name given to the castle famous ghost? And the answer, the Grey Lady. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a fishing reel. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we'll hear from the Black Country Living Museum and find out the history of how traditional sweets were made.
Nothing brings back memories of childhood quite like the taste of a favourite sweet. The sugary coating, the sweet and sour taste of rhubarb and custard, pear drops or licking kali off a lolly. Today we are delving into the history of sweet making inside T. Cook's Sweet Shop.
Hello and welcome to Sugar Plums and Sherbet. My name's Jean and I'm going to tell you a little bit about Black Country sweet making. In the Black Country, we don't call our sweet shops, we call them suk shops. Now, suk is the word for sweets in Black Country dialect because children in Victorian times would suck on the hard-boiled sweets that were made. Then, because they didn't have a lot of money, they would then save that sweet for another day. And shop is shop. So suk shop is the sweets that the children would have enjoyed, albeit just for a very short amount of time. Sweet making in the Black Country was mainly, in Victorian times, the hard-boiled sweets. And to make the hard-boiled sweets, you would firstly need a copper pan. The man was usually the one who did the sweet making, and the woman would sell the sweets. But the man would start by putting in sugar, followed by glucose, and then he would boil that up to a temperature of 300 degrees Fahrenheit, or about 150 Celsius these days. And in the copper pan, which was extremely heavy, he would wait and wait until it bubbled up, until it got almost to the surface. When it reached that temperature, he would pour it out onto a heated table. That kept the mixture warm while he added the things to make them into sweets. Colours in Victorian times were not the best. In fact, a doctor wrote in the Lancet in late Victorian times that he did not approve of the use of certain things or poisons within the sweet making realm. For red, they started by using red lead. Red lead, of course, is extremely dangerous. Following that, for red, they used this. This is cochineal. And cochineal is squashed beetle's blood. There we have it. At this point, you would groan. You would think, oh no, how can they do it? But yes, that's what they used. For blue, it would be mercury. Extremely dangerous again. One of the worst colours of all would be green. Green sweets were made with arsenic poison. Flavours in Victorian times in the Black Country would have been mainly what was grown in the local gardens. One of the most popular sweets of the time, and is actually quite popular today, is dandelion and burdock. Very popular. There are other things you can think of right away, such as mint. They would use mint from the garden. But locally grown flowers such as coltsfoot, horehound, all those are very popular sweets at that time.
From the 1800s, this was the dawn of a new era for confectionery manufacturers, assisted by the rise of the Industrial Revolution and mass production. British sugar beet became more commonly used than costly sugarcane, which had to be imported. The cost of setting up confectionery businesses was relatively inexpensive and could even be set up in the backyard at home. Sweets were now not only a luxury for the rich, but available for the working classes too. An average of 33 bags of sugar was eaten per person in Britain by the 1900s. Soldiers in the First World War were said to have had very poor teeth because of this.
The sweet maker would use a drop roller machine, such as the one we have here, and choose the rollers for the shape of sweet that he wanted. The drop rollers themselves, the ones that we have here, were made in Rochdale by a firm called Luke Collier and Son in early Victorian times, from around 1835. And they are brass. He was a brass founder. And two of these would fit onto the machine, such as the one here we have set up. And the mix, then, the small amounts that he put into small balls, would go onto this side of the drop roller. He would turn the handle. The mix would go through while it was still hot, because the mix must be hot, otherwise the sweet making doesn't work because it would be too brittle. The shape on the roller is pushed into the hot sugar. It comes out in a strip, which is then placed on the surface and allowed to cool for about 5 minutes. Once the sweets have gone hard, it takes about 4 to 5 minutes, you would drop them into this, which is a riddle. It's an old-fashioned sieve, and my father regularly asked me to do his garden soil with one of these. So the sweets would go into here, shake off the excess so that you only have the sweet shape in there, and then for about 30 seconds they're put over steam, and that allows us to cover the sweets in sugar so that they don't stick together. And that was the last part of the sweet making. Once that was done, they would then have the sweets ready for sale. You don't see bags like this very often, do you? This is a cone-shaped brown greaseproof paper bag. Do you hear it? And in that, in the early part of the 20th century and late Victorian times, they would put 3, 4, 5 small sweets. They would fold the bag over, and that was a treat for children. That was called a penny twist. Children generally in the Black Country didn't have much money, so when they wanted a sweet, they knew that if they went to Mr. Cook's store, knocked on it and said, "Hello, can we help you today?" that if they got some work from Mr. Cook, their reward would be 2 or 3 nice small boiled sweets that he'd made, which they would suck and save. So that was the way children managed to get sweets in Victorian times in this area.
We do hope this hasn't put you off your sweets and has given you some interesting stories to get your teeth into. Thank you for joining us.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra! Thank you.